Welcome back, everybody. Today is March the 8th, and it is 5:47 p.m. on the East Coast, and I am in Folkston, Georgia. If you don't know where that is, that's, that's north of Jacksonville, and a little old small southern Georgia town, and not a whole lot here, just a bunch of poor folks, basically. But anyway, as I was riding along, I was just had my music on and my soft music. I like my piano music when I'm just riding along. I just like to relax when I'm driving, and I was just thinking about things. Of course, the spring is here, which is nice, and I'm seeing the, I guess it's dogwoods or maybe redbuds, I'm not really sure, but at any rate, there's a lot of trees around here that are turning white. They're very pretty, but just kind of made me think of, you know, past spring times. I always like the spring, always like change of the seasons, always enjoyed the change of the seasons. Because I guess I get tired of one season, then I'm ready for the other one. Usually by the time the other one comes along, I'm very, very ready for it. So fall's my favorite season, but spring is here now, and I do love spring. I like that it's a little cooler. Now, I'm up in North Florida. Right now I'm in Georgia, but I live in North Florida. But I like that it's still a little cool, but it's not cold. Of course, it never really gets cold in Florida, but, you know, it's cool enough that you can enjoy the outdoors. You know, the flowers are starting to come out. I love the flowers, and the trees are starting to bud, and they're getting that real green, lime green sort of color to their leaves as they're coming out. It's just, it's like the earth is renewed, it's reborn, it's a rebirth, I guess. And then I think of spring as, you know, it's kind of wrapping up the end of the cold season, and, you know, the trees are starting to fill up the forest again. And I don't know, it's a good feeling. You know, when I was a kid, spring was really cool. There was a particular time when spring was just very much, when I think spring, it's kind of on my mind. We were living up in Jacksonville, Florida, and working at the Baptist Home for Children. And on the campus were big, huge live oaks azaleas. They were everywhere. And it was just these pretty pink, sort of fuchsia-colored azaleas. They were everywhere, just all over the campus. And it was blooming. It was so beautiful. Trees were, there were some dogwoods on the campus too, and it was just so beautiful. And so, for whatever reason, that's in my mind when I was a kid. There was another one, well, not a kid, but one in the past, but there was another time too. We were living up in Tennessee, up in Sevierville, Tennessee, and we were working for the Church of God Home for Children. And on the campus, we became at the end of winter, the beginning of spring. And I remember everything blooming there too, and it was just so beautiful. And my wife and I at the time took a hike up in the mountains, and the dogwoods were blooming and the trees were blooming. It was just really, really pretty. It was a great, really great day. It was a great experience, and one that is captured in the memories of my mind. I like to think on things in my past, you know, memories that I have. I like to relive those. It's funny how some things can trigger a memory, for me anyway, like a smell or a scene. You know, you can kind of come around a corner driving, and all of a sudden there's this vista in front of you, and, you know, in a moment, you're. Reminds you of something from your past or your childhood, and it just all of a sudden there's that feeling. I can't explain it, but it's that feeling, that real comfortable, nice feeling that you kind of want to hold on to, and you try to hang on to it, but it's like trying to hang on to a vapor of smoke. It just, you can't do it, and it's gone. And then, you know, I always hate when that happens, because then I'm thinking, oh man, I could have lived in that feeling, that moment for, you know, eternity, honestly. And it's like a song comes up, and then, you know, it takes me back to my childhood or my teenage years. All of a sudden, I'm back in my teenage years, and, you know, this song is making me think of all these memories and all the things that were tied to being a kid, and, you know, and all the angst of being a teenager. And anyway, I like that. And I think the older I get, too, the more my memories become, I guess, fresher. And I'm sure that's just all part of aging, you know. But I wish sometimes I could bottle those memories up and just, you know, relive them. Just the good memories, all the great memories that I had when I was growing up, you know, as a kid, as a young adult, even as an adult, you know, and just take those memories and just put them on a reel, you know. Wouldn't it be cool if we could do that? Just put them on a reel and just play them over and over again, you know. It's therapeutic, really. It's addictive, really, to me, because I think how much I love those feelings of those vintage memories that I have, you know. And I look back now with adult eyes, and I think, you know, I wish I could have. Of course, it's, I know, I always say that. I wish I could know the things I knew now back then, but I wouldn't have those experiences if I had an adult brain. It took the childlike brain that I had, the childlike, you know, fantasy world that I believed things, you know, that I was so gullible, you know. And I wouldn't have had those memories if I'd have had the adult mind. But now that I look back on them with an adult mind, I'm, it's like times that you wish you would have appreciated more. You know, it's like when someone's dead and gone and you realize, you know, man, I wish I would have spent more time with them. I wish I would have appreciated them more. I wish I would have asked questions more. I wish I would have spent, you know, time talking to them more. And, but it's that perspective that you have as an adult looking back in your childhood that you realize, you know, so much was wasted. Youth is wasted on the young. It's so true, you know. And I see these kids today, and you know, they're oblivious to what's going on around them. And I think to myself, you know, one day they're gonna look back on these times. It's gonna have a different meaning. You know, we all do. It's just, it's life. It's the way life is. You know. But as I get older, I try to really live every day the best I can, and just, you know, take my time looking at the things of this earth that I know are fleeting, and one day I won't be able to. And so I think in many ways getting older is good, because I don't have the same fears I used to have as a child or when I was younger. Now, granted, I'm only 57, but I mean, I'm closer to death than I've ever been, you know. And I laugh because it's just an uncomfortable subject, really, to think about, you know, not living anymore. But I do tend to appreciate the small things, you know, like a flower. I know I pass flowers or a rose, and I'll lean down and smell it. You know, I love the smell and the fragrance of roses and flowers that have a fragrance. I like that. And now I take my time. Now I appreciate things more, you know, as I've gotten older. And, you know, I appreciate people more. And I'm quick to tell people how much I appreciate them. You know, that's something that I've learned as I've gotten older, is that I'm apt to tell someone how much they mean to me rather than wait and tell they're gone and wish I had said something, you know. And so I do a lot of that. I tell a lot of people how much they mean to me and how important they are. And I guess in some way, I probably want people to feel that way about me, you know. I always hear about people who have died, and you know, and I just went to a funeral the other day, and people got up and they spoke at this man's funeral, and they talked about, you know, some of his personal traits and how he acted, how good he was and how wonderful he was and everything. And I'm always taking stock of my own life when I hear that. And I think, well, would people say that about me? Would they really talk that good about me? You know, and I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't. Maybe a few would. Maybe none would. But I think for me, I'd like to have people who say, you know, he was a good guy. He was a good man, you know. I've not always been a good man, but I'd like for people to say that I might have been a good guy. You know, there's people in my life that, you know, like my fourth grade teacher, Ms. Covington, and how important she was to me after, you know, I got out of the fourth grade, and I remember my last year of high school, I went back to see Ms. Covington, and it happened to be her last year teaching, and I remember coming into her classroom and talking to her, and she introduced her kids to me and said this was one of my students a long time ago. And now I will tell you, Ms. Covington was probably my favorite teacher in elementary school, and yet she whipped me every day with that paddle. And she put me up there by her desk. And she was a black lady. And she just had a way about her that was, she treated me like I was probably her nephew or maybe even her son, you know, the way she talked to me. And she was so sweet, so precious. And that was the last time I saw her. And I think about her a lot. I can't tell you exactly what she did to be my favorite teacher in elementary school, but I just remember her very fondly. And then when I was in high school, I don't remember really having a teacher in middle school that stood out. But when I was in high school, Mr. Roberts, Paul Ross Roberts III, he was my chorus teacher. And I loved to sing. And I had a friend of mine who begged me to get into chorus with him. And so I did. And changed my life. And I made some awesome friends. And Mr. Roberts was a young teacher. Looking back now, I guess he was probably early 30s, maybe. And he was just a very intense man. But he saw something in me that he invested in me. I was not always the best student. Had a lot of emotional things going on as a child. Had a lot of things to overcome at home. And he sort of saw beyond that, you know. And I could understand now, looking back, that, you know, I was this poor white trash kid. He was trying to instill in me some values and some, you know, I guess try to invest in me a bit, you know. I was resistant to him, and it was because my mother had said something to me one time about him, and she put a seed in my brain that made me question why he was trying to be nice to me, and she insinuated that he might be a predator, you know, a sexual predator. He was far from that, but my mother was jealous. She had her own mental health issues that she dealt with, but I pulled away from Paul because I was terrified of being a victim, and I know it hurt him, and I never really got to explain to him why. But years later, I ran into him. It was just kind of serendipity. He wasn't teaching anymore. He was a music minister down in Avon Park, Florida. I was playing with a gospel group, and I was playing the piano. And we came to this church, and I was setting up the equipment. Out walks Paul Roberts. It's like blown away. And I got to tell him how much he meant to me and how much I appreciated everything that he did for me as a child, how he sacrificed his time for me. And so I felt like that was, you know, God's way of giving me the opportunity to sort of, you know, give flowers to the living, as my grandmother used to say. And so that was kind of neat. He was a really, really good man in so many ways. Of course, he died. He had diabetes, and diabetes took him out of this world. He was a good man, and he invested in me. And there was another guy that invested in me too, and his name was Warren Hodges. He was probably in his early 30s. He was a very successful businessman who had several Chevron stations back in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. And I actually worked for him, pumping gas back in the day when people pumped your gas for you. And I remember, I thought that, you know, Mr. Warren, as we called him, Mr. Warren, was just the nicest guy, and so friendly. And, you know, we were just poor. We were just really, really poor. And he was, you know, even by today's standards, he was very wealthy. And, but he was so humble and so friendly and so kind. And I remember one time sitting out in a lawn chair with him in his front yard. I just wanted to spend as much time with him as I could. He was friends with my uncle and my aunt, and that's how I got to know him. And he had a couple of kids, one son that was about my age, and another son that was about 2 years younger. And they lived in a really big, beautiful house, a big, beautiful yard, nice, beautiful neighborhood. And he let me just kind of hang out with him, and we were watching planes fly over in Tampa, Florida, and he would tell me the kind of plane it was, who was the company, and tell me about the plane, and just, he was so knowledgeable and so friendly, and I just found myself wanting to wish he were my father, you know. My dad never did stuff like that, so Mr. Warren was a really, really kind man. He's dead and gone too. It's people that invested in me through the years, and, you know, made an impact on me, good or bad. They made an impact on me, and you tend to remember these things. I guess as I get older, I start to reflect more on my life than I ever did before. I guess because it's coming to an end, and it's sort of like, you know, we're wrapping up the game, and, you know, you're gathering all your pieces together. You're, you're figuring out, you know, this is what I accumulated, this is what I have. You realize that, you know, what really mattered wasn't what mattered. You realize that it was people that mattered, you know, it was relationships that mattered, not things, not belongings, not personal items that you amassed over the years. That meant nothing. It was personal relationships. It was friendships, you know. And I guess as you get older, you kind of realize that, you know. And I guess as I get older, I'll probably go deeper and deeper in melancholy and thought, you know, no telling where I'll lead off. But I do think a lot about my youth. I think a lot about my childhood. It seemed to go by so quickly. And then my youth as well just kind of sped by so quickly. And by the time I realized it was over, it was too late to go back. And, you know, I think of that movie, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And, you know, where they... the second movie, I think it was the second movie, where they wanted to stay, and he said, no, you can't, you got to go back. And I remember feeling so conflicted inside when I watched it, and I thought, man, I'd be so disappointed if I couldn't stay, you know, such a perfect place to stay in, you know. But reality calls, you know. Fantasy's great, but reality calls. Reality is what, you know, shapes a man. I don't know what the world will think of me when I'm gone, if they think anything at all. You know, I don't necessarily need to be remembered. I don't need a statue or a bust of my head somewhere, you know. I don't need a story about me. When I'm dead and gone, it'd probably just be my kids, maybe my grandson. And eventually we just kind of fade off, you know. I think about my grandfathers from time to time, but not often. I think about our grandmas, you know. And I think about my dad from time to time. I didn't really have a great relationship with my parents, so I don't really think about them often. But I do think of relationships that matter to me. I do think of those. And I do believe that there's a place where we go when we die. And I hope that, you know, I'll get to see all these people again one day. I mean, I believe that I will, but I mean, I do have hope that I will, but it's not always solid. Sometimes I do doubt it, if that's really, really true or not. And other times I'm like, oh no, it's true. I know it's true. I believe it. But you know, I think of Ruth Graham and Billy Graham's wife when she was dying. And she was in the throes of death, and she looked at Billy and said, "Did we believe the right thing? Are we sure we believed the right thing?" He assured her that they did. And I guess with every person, there comes a time when you probably question things. I don't know. But I see things totally different now than when I was, you know, younger. And I treat things differently than when I was younger. It's just part of growing up, I guess, and getting older. You know, I look at my kids now, and they've got a 30-year-old and a 27-year-old and a soon-to-be 16-year-old. And, you know, they don't want to spend time with their dad, their old man, you know. It's just the way it is. It's just the way kids are today. And, you know, I look at my life and I wonder, did I screw up? Did I make a mistake? Was I not the best dad I could be, you know? It's just kind of late for that now. But, I mean, I tried to be a good dad. I really did. I tried to be the best dad I could. I tried to be, you know, firm but fair and, you know, loving. But also, you know, I expected things from them. I expected them to do well and, you know, to be honest with themselves, honest with me. And I know that they're young now. Maybe one day when they get older, maybe they'll come back around. I don't know. Maybe they want to hang out with their dad. And I think, you know, what if they don't? I told my kids when they were little, I said, you know, I'm your dad. I'm not your friend. You have plenty of friends. You'll have plenty of friends growing up, but you only have me as your dad. I'm the only dad you'll ever have. I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here to be your dad. So one day we can be friends. Right now, I have to be your dad.